Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, and welcome to the 206th edition of the Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show. I'm your host, Daniel Feuerstein. I'll give you an American perspective of our clubs, leagues, players, national team, and other fabulous moments. You can get your daily reading from me and other writers over at SoccerNewsDay.com, as well as FansFavorite.com. Come on in. Chat room's open. Talk amongst yourselves if you like. If you have a question for me, I'll try to answer it to the best of my abilities. Tomorrow afternoon, live, which would probably be around 7, 8 o'clock at night in European time, the United States will be holding its first ever friendly. Well, not really holding. They'll be on the road at the Czech Republic, as the USA, of course, will be taking on the Czechs. This is the first match after the FIFA World Cup in Brazil this past June, July. At the same time, this will be the first ever friendly not involving Landon Donovan. Now, obviously, Landon Donovan will be performing in the friendly against Ecuador in October on Friday the 10th as Ecuador comes to Hartford to take on the United States. And, pardon me, had to sneeze. I didn't want you to hear it, but this is the first USA friendly without Landon Donovan. This is now officially the first friendly that Jurgen Klinsmann is going to have without Landon being considered for future Gold Cup tournaments. Obviously, the special Copa America tournament that will be coming in 2016, and then, of course, the long road to Russia for 2018 to qualify. And it's going to be a little strange right now. It's going to be a little bit weird, if you might say, because the truth of the matter is that no one expected this to happen. No one expected to see Landon Donovan calling it quits, I would say, this early in his career. And obviously I know he's turning 32, but the truth of the matter is I just did not believe he would just say that would be that. But as we've already talked about it so many times, discussed it so many times, it comes a point in life where it's time to move on. And so far, Landon Donovan has done so, and to be honest, so has Jurgen Klinsmann. And now we're seeing the future roster for this national team, and we're going to see who is going to be the lucky ones to fill those roster spots coming up for the national team for future tournaments, including qualifying for the World Cup. And it's going to be an interesting situation because, let's be honest, some of these players we've seen already, some of these players we've heard about them, some of them popped up out of nowhere and surprised us in the World Cup this past summer. The one thing that I believe is going to be a big test, a very big test for this national team and for Jurgen Klinsmann, who is going to rise above and take over that position, which basically did belong to Landon Donovan. Yes, we have Jozy Altidore. Yes, we got Clint Mathis. excuse me, Clint Mathis. Oh, my God, I'm going too far. I'm going back way too far. I meant to say Clint Dempsey. I apologize. But the truth of the matter is we have to see who is going to take over and become that next great talent for the national team, because there's going to be some pressure. Now, I don't know if you guys are going to put that pressure on these new roster players, but the point is, this is the time to start blooding in new players for this new cycle. This is huge. This is going to be a huge moment for some of these people. Now, obviously, once again, with Tim Howard taking a year off, some are saying that, well, this is a signal that he's probably doesn't want to be part of the national team anymore either, and I don't believe that's the case. I really believe Tim Howard wants to take a break from the international scene, from the national team. He's got every right to do it. I mean, he wants to, and it's only a year. I think Tim Howard will be refreshed. I believe Tim Howard will come back and be the starting goalkeeper for the national team. Obviously, if he does decide to change his mind and say he's done with the national team, look, we got Brad Guzan. We have Nick Raimondo right now that can fill in his shoes, not a problem. Obviously, the next two in line for national team keeper is either Bill Hamid from DC United, Sean Johnson from the Chicago Fire, and I'll even go as far as, say, Luis Robles from the New York Red Bulls, because Robles has done a fantastic job as well. So that will be, right now, the big question mark when it comes to the goalkeepers. But as always, goalkeeping has been a fantastic position for the national team, and there many feel that is the strong suit. But now, right now, here is the bigger question. On this roster right now for the road trip at Prague in the Czech Republic, John Brooks, he'll be looked at as a starter now. Timmy Chandler, of course. Greg Garza from Club Tijuana, Fabian Johnson will be a big member here. He has been the last year or two. Tim Ream has resurfaced after a couple of years in Bolton. Now, let me just say that in the past, I wouldn't say critical of Tim Ream. I wouldn't say it was critical. I was critical about him. But I felt that after two seasons at the Red Bulls and in Major League Soccer, I felt that he wasn't ready to go abroad, and at the same time, I felt that he wasn't ready for the national team. And as much as I would have loved for him to be there, you know, at the time for the national team, even I could say that he wasn't ready. And he went through some painful years at Bolton. Of course, they got relegated out of the Premier League. But he's played better in Bolton. And I'm very happy to see him finally get that opportunity for the national team. We'll see if he has improved his play as a central defender. And, of course, we have Alejandro Bedoya, Joe Corona, Nick Diskerud, Julian Green now on a year loan with Hamburg in the Bundesliga, still part of Bayern Munich, but just not for this year. It's a loan deal. Some new players, Emerson Heinemann, plays over at Fulham. Alfredo Morales and Ingolstadt. Breck Shea now finally getting an opportunity at Stokes, playing over at Stoke City. Joe Gao with Borussia Dortmund, number two. Josie Altidore, Jordan Morris from Stanford, Rubio Rubin from Utrecht, and Bobby Wood from 1860 Munich. Now, these are the players that will start this first wave of new blood for the national team. And you know what? Good luck to these kids. Good luck to them, because this is going to be probably one of the big camps that we're going to see in these 3 months, September, October, November, for these friendlies. So far, so good. And now we're going to see where the talent has risen for this national team. This is not just facing opponents in CONCACAF. Now you're facing opponents from around the world. You're not going to be in your little stadiums in Germany or your college stadiums, your MLS stadiums, or everywhere else around. Now you're going for the big boys. You're playing for the big club, your country. There's already enough pressure on them right now. I mean, how much more pressure can you have? This national team is now on a brand new cycle with Jurgen Klinsmann running the show for the second consecutive cycle in a row. This is where these people now need to show that they have the ability to play for their country in front of the biggest stage that they'll ever get to be on, the world stage. Because now comes the hard part. When we get to those important games, when you're qualifying for 3 points, and you're trying to not only be tops in your semifinal group, but tops in the final round to qualify for the World Cup in Russia. I cannot wait. It will be exciting. It will be a lot of fun. Tomorrow, 2:15 p.m. Eastern, 11:15 a.m. Pacific on the NBC Sports Network and also Spanish Language Unimas at the Generali Arena in Prague in the Czech Republic, the United States on the road to face the Czech Republic in a friendly that we shall see how they're going to perform and how they're going to try and get forward, because this is a big deal, my friends. This is a very, very big deal as we get ready to see what will happen with the newer and younger talent that the United States men's national team has to get to qualify and perform in Russia for years' time. Ladies and gentlemen, I've got a great show for you tonight. My good friend Warren Jones will be joining me later on to talk about the way the Houston Dynamo have played so far in MLS. NASL segment as we recap the next round of matches in the fall season of 2014. Of course, the New York Red Bulls with their 2-0 loss will recap that loss against their hated rivals in DC United in the second hour. My first guest could not come on live tonight. We recorded it. And once again, Toronto FC does the impossible, does the unthinkable yet again. Because as everyone probably heard on Sunday, Ryan Nelson was sacked by Toronto FC, including his entire coaching staff. From the Canadian Soccer News Group is Daniel Squizzato. We recorded this interview, and then we'll finish it off a little bit later. Thankfully, though, it sounds like Jermaine Defoe will not be going anywhere. Daniel Squizzato.
And once again, this is the 40 Scenes Fire American Soccer Show, talking a lot of things going on up in Canada, especially an interesting one that just happened over this past weekend. Joining me is Daniel Squizzato from the Canadian Soccer News Group. Daniel, thank you again for joining me.
Thanks, as always, for having me.
We've mentioned many, many times that it doesn't matter what type of season Toronto has. It's always going to be interesting, either of the signings, the trades, the sending-offs, getting rid of players. But even the coaching staff is not immune to this. And all of a sudden, Ryan Nelson is sacked this past weekend, including his entire coaching staff, which I could not believe this happened.
Yeah, well, you mentioned whatever type of season it is for Toronto FC, and of course the types of Toronto FC seasons have always ranged from mediocre to bad to very bad, and part of that, of course, has been this ongoing revolving door of players and managers, Greg Vanney taking over, not just as interim, but as permanent new head coach of Toronto FC, taking over for Ryan Nelson, becoming their ninth head coach in less than eight seasons of MLS play, which... If for anyone who has a basic elementary school math, you'll know that that's more than one manager per year, which is not a very good average to be running with. As for kind of the thinking behind this move, I mean, it did come as a bit of a surprise considering that TFC is right in the midst of pushing for a playoff spot in a pretty crowded position in the Eastern Conference. But I think there has been unrest among a number of fans, you know, a lot of people questioned Ryan Nelson being hired in the first place when he was last year. You may remember that he was announced as the incoming manager of Toronto FC when he was still an active player at QPR, which, a lot of eyebrows were raised by that. He was hired by Kevin Payne, the general manager at the time. Later that year, Tim Leiweke came in as the new boss at Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment, which owns TFC. Kevin Payne was out, but Ryan Nelson surprisingly survived the axe, and Leiweke said that whoever the new general manager was, they would have to work with Ryan Nelson. Tim Bezbachenko was the new general manager. Some people thought Nelson should have gone when Kevin Payne did. But the team had high expectations this year. They brought in Jermaine Defoe. They brought in Michael Bradley. They brought in Gilberto. They brought in a whole complement of big stars, as well as new players to make this into what was going to hopefully finally be a playoff team, and very easily still could be. But the question was whether Ryan Nelson, who had no coaching experience prior to being with TFC, whether he could make this all click. There were questions about the tactics during the season, questions about some of his decisions. A lot of people suggested that he was a bit too inflexible with some of his tactics during the games. And that 3-0 loss at home to the Revolution, a team that TFC is fighting for one of those playoff spots with, that seemed to be the last straw. Ryan Nelson, after the game, said that he wasn't happy with some of the remarks that Bezbachenko had made, saying that this was a high-pressure game for TFC. Of course it was a high-pressure game. They came out flat. They didn't do what they needed to do. They lost 3 points, and they lost a lot of goodwill. And for Ryan Nelson, he lost his job. In terms of why the entire coaching staff had to be thrown out with why they had to be babies in this bathwater. I mean, the reality is that in any sport, in any league, a general manager is almost always going to want to work with a manager and a coaching staff of their choosing. And, whether or not the Nelson and Bezbachenko situation was going to be tenable for much longer, no one really knows. But it looks like TFC, in terms of the coaching staff, they are making yet another fresh start, yet another clean break, and with just over, a little under 2 months left to go in the regular season, and TFC realistically pushing for a playoff spot, it's really going to be interesting to see how this all plays out. If they can actually get into the playoffs and have a home playoff date and have all the excitement that comes with that, I think all of this turmoil and all this uncertainty, the fans will be very easy to very ready to forgive that. But if they don't, if this turns into another lost season for Toronto FC, this might unfortunately be a major tipping point for the club as they hope to retain relevance in a pretty crowded sporting environment in Toronto.
You know the temperature of Toronto when it comes to MLS. You know how fickle the city has been. It doesn't matter if it's the Blue Jays or the Maple Leafs or the Raptors. Even in Canadian Football League standards with the Argonauts, but still, is this, as you say, the tipping point? Could this be the tipping point of supporters stopping, arriving at BMO Field if this continues on?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you say supporters, I mean, I think first of, the folks in the supporter section, the people, the self-identified hardcore fans, those of whom have had season tickets for multiple years. And I think those are the people who are going to be most aware of, you know, the ins and outs of this deal, the specifics, you know, all of the, many of the things that I just spoke about. For people who, you know, maybe they come out and watch TFC a couple of times a year, they'll have this perception that, oh, it's always a revolving door, it's always kind of a gong show, but that's not going to specifically affect whether they're going to continue to follow the team or continue to come out to games. What will affect it is what they've been sold this year. I mean, bringing in these high-profile designated players, there was a big marketing push in the offseason around mostly around Jermaine Defoe, but then around Michael Bradley and Dwayne De Rosario coming back to the team as well. And so fans have been sold season ticket packages or sold tickets based on it's a new start, this is a new TFC, we know we've had problems in the past, but now things are fixed. If this is what they see, like, oh, a new manager, you know, manager gets canned before the season's done, and, oh, they fall short of the playoffs, that might be a tipping point for a lot of people, because this has been the same song and dance in Toronto for pretty much the team's entire existence. And, you know, there always are going to be hardcore fans, the supporter section people who are going to stick with the team through thick and thin. But I think, no team in Toronto or in any other MLS city can base their operations on simply that group of hardcore fans. Because even those groups can be chipped away at after a while if the frustration builds up, as we've seen in Toronto. But, you know, you're not going to fill an entire stadium with the people who do follow the in-and-out minutia of the team from one day to the next, and who might say, oh, you know what, Ryan Nelson, he was inexperienced, he was naive, like, maybe he shouldn't have been there in the first place. You're going to fill a lot of those seats with people who get drawn in by high-profile players and get drawn in by wins and get drawn in by playoffs. And if the perception sticks that this team is never going to be able to fulfill its promise, then when people are thinking, how am I going to spend my sporting dollars, my entertainment dollars, what teams am I going to emotionally invest in, they're not going to pick Toronto FC because, as you said, Toronto has, of course, an NHL team, a Major League Baseball team, an NBA team, a CFL team. You know, there's a lot going on. And, Toronto FC, as this revolving door continues moving, they risk more and more falling into, I don't want to say irrelevancy, but falling off the radar in a busy sporting city. And, again, if this team can get it together and make the playoffs, which they very easily can do because they are a talented team, then a lot of this is going to be forgiven. It's all going to be forgotten, and, the bandwagon will be overflowing again. But if this season turns out like all the rest for TFC have without MLS playoffs, then it's going to be very, very difficult for the team to convince people next year that, yes, this is the year that things really change, because you can only pee in someone's ear for so long before they start realizing, you know what, it's not really raining.
No, very, very true. Now, as we are recording this, there is still some time transfer window in Europe. And, of course, right now the rumor is Jermaine Defoe is being shopped around by TFC. It doesn't that hurt? I mean, after all, the whole emphasis of it's a big bloody deal made by Toronto FC PR people bringing in Jermaine Defoe and bringing in Michael Bradley, and now you're hearing that Toronto is ready to jettison one of their top prizes in this past MLS offseason?
In terms of public relations and the team's place within the sporting consciousness in Toronto, shipping out Defoe at this point would be cataclysmic. Because people will say, people, they don't necessarily know who Ryan Nelson is. They know TFC, goes through coaches pretty regularly, but whatever, if they got rid of him, they must have had a reason, so what? We don't come to games to watch the manager, we come to see the players. But as you say, for months on end, Jermaine Defoe was the epicenter of marketing for this team. People were sold season tickets based on Defoe being the headliner of this group of incoming star players. And it is impossible, if a deal comes through, and as you say, as we're recording this, we don't know whether or not it has, but if a deal comes through and TFC sells Jermaine Defoe to a European club before the transfer deadline window closes, it doesn't matter what club it is, it doesn't matter how much money it is, there is no way you can explain that to a North American fan base. How do you tell a North American fan base that, hey, 10 months ago, this guy was the savior, and he's their leading scorer. He has performed. It's not as though he's underperformed. He's come in, and he's done what he was expected to do, which is score goals and have an impact on games. So if fans are told that this is the year that things turn around, this is the year we make the playoffs, there is no way to justify shipping out your highly prized player, the player that people are paying money to see at a time like this, right in the midst of a playoff push. And I understand that, perhaps it's something with the player himself. Maybe he doesn't want to be in Toronto anymore. Maybe he wants to go back to Europe. Maybe it's something in the locker room. Maybe, it has to do with the firing of Ryan Nelson. There are always going to be things behind the scenes like this that influence these decisions. But from a PR perspective, shipping out Jermaine Defoe would take the cake in terms of self-damaging Toronto FC moves. Because then you can never sell a high-profile incoming player again. You can never again tell Toronto FC fans, this player is coming in, they are going to make the difference, they're going to get us where we need to go. Because they're going to say, well, Jermaine Defoe was supposed to do that, and you got rid of him 5 months into the season. How can we believe you this time? Again, even if they ship out Jermaine Defoe, if the team makes the playoffs, I think a lot will be forgiven and forgotten. And realistically, on the field, TFC actually does have some depth when it comes to striker. Gilberto is red hot. They've got Luke Moore, who's performed well. Bright Dike is coming back from a knee injury. Dwayne Di Rosario, yes, he's, into his mid-30s now, not the player he once was, but when your fourth-choice striker is a guy who was MLS MVP a couple of seasons ago, you're in a pretty good position. So again, getting rid of Defoe is not necessarily a killer on the field. I mean, of course, you want to have Jermaine Defoe if you can, but he's injured right now. We heard a few days ago that he's likely out for the through the end of September anyway. So they're going to have to make do with him for about a month one way or the other. But from that public relations, from that fan perception perspective, if this team gets rid of Jermaine Defoe and then fails to make the playoffs, I mean, calling it the death knell of the team is far too hyperbolic and exaggerated. But that's a team that's going to lose whatever trust and whatever goodwill and whatever good faith they may have had amongst Toronto sports fans that they may have ever had. And I mean, as you say, the tagline bringing him in was it's a bloody big deal. I mean, where do you go from there? That would be a bloody big deal. They don't need the money. Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment, they have a license to print money. They're owned by the two big media conglomerates that essentially own the market in Canada. It's MLS. It's a salary cap league. Even if they didn't have money coming out of their rear ends, even if Barcelona showed up and said, we want to give you $100 million for Jermaine Defoe, of course that would never happen. But even if they did, who cares? Money's not the issue. This isn't Europe. The idea that this is a good piece of business, Toronto's going to make money off of this, That's not applicable in this scenario. And so, if this is a matter of the player forcing a move and saying that they don't want to be here anymore, that's one thing. And if it's a player who decides he's not going to perform his duties and fulfill his contract anymore, then that's one thing. And again, I don't know if that's the case, but if this all plays out and that is the case, then that's one matter. But if this is, Toronto trying to make a good piece of business, as the saying in Europe would be, I can't possibly think of a worse piece of business for Toronto FC to transact. So, as you say, by the time people are listening to this, they'll know one way or another, Jermaine Defoe either will or will not be a Toronto FC player. But whatever the outcome of that situation, at the end of the day, I've said this several times already, but it really, really is, more so than ever before, playoffs or bust for this Toronto FC franchise.
Absolutely. Daniel, thank you again for the time. I really do appreciate it, and definitely we'll see what the news will be once the transfer window closes. So thank you again, and I'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, thanks as always for listening, and, you know, TFC is many things, but boring is never one of them.
Absolutely. Thanks again.
All right, take care.
And that was Daniel Squizzotto from the Canadian Soccer News Group talking about what's going on in Toronto, but, of course, stranger things are going on down in Houston, because if you look at the Eastern Conference standings, for some strange reason, the Houston Dynamo are at least at the bottom, not the very bottom, but they're not having a good season. Joining me to talk about this is, of course, my good friend Warren Jones down in Houston. Warren, outside of the perils of the Dynamo, how are you doing?
Doing very well, Daniel. Good to speak with you again, as usual.
As always, it's great to talk to you. So, you know, I never doubt how Dominic Kinnear manages his side, gets his squad ready for a match, but do you feel maybe after all the, let's just say that the good luck that's come to Houston, it finally caught up to them and maybe now they're not having such a good year?
Well, I think you'd have to define what you mean by luck.
Oh, you know what I mean.
Well,
it's called starting off the season dead in the water and then finding that particular match where they right the ship and then they go on a playoff spree.
Well, here we are at the beginning of the stretch, the home stretch of the season, and as poorly as the Dynamo have played, the fact remains that they're just merely a couple of two games of results or three at the most off of a playoff spot. And I think if you ask any Dynamo fan in the years going back to since after the Dynamo came to Houston, this is just sort of same song, seventh verse. It's I think if we had our druthers, we'd like to be sitting where DC United and Sporting are, but it just doesn't seem to be our way. And one of these days our time is going to run out. We're looking at the standings with 9 games left. Mm-hmm. Most of those that we're battling to jump to get in the final playoff spot. We don't have. I don't believe. I think if I check the schedule properly, the 4 of our next 5 games, or 3 of the next 4, are against the teams directly above us. In other words, and then we don't play any of the top teams, I don't think, until the final few weeks of the season. So if those teams are set in the playoffs, they may be resting people. We could pick up some sloppy points in the last 3 or 4 matches. Who knows? We also have an advantage. It's a small advantage, you might say, but if it gets down to tiebreakers, the Dynamo being in ninth place, they actually still have 8 victories, which is more than any of the 3 teams ahead of them. So if it gets down to a tiebreaker, it's not in MLS, it's not goal difference.
Nope.
It is not the first tiebreaker. It's wins. And if the Dynamo can just piece together a couple more wins, they'll secure the first tiebreaker spot, and that may just be enough. when you say luck, they've done just enough to possibly put themselves in a place to win a tiebreaker if they get there. So I'm not going to, you and I have. I think you could tell by my text the other day. I mean, I am not going to come on the show and pimp the Dynamo by any means, but for being a good team this season. But as usual, they've just done just enough to keep their head above water, and even sitting in ninth place, in large measure because of the teams ahead of them haven't played much better. I guess that could be considered luck as well. Normally, teams in eighth, 5 through 8 would be considerably ahead, but you look all the way up the table at third place, and you've got New England, Toronto, and Columbus all sitting at 33 points. So it would take a semi-miracle, but it's not out of the realm of possibility for the Dynamo not only to finish in a playoff spot, but to finish in fourth or third.
It's
if,
a possibility.
If one of these teams...
No, you're right.
I will admit that. But it's not like we're looking at a table where the teams ahead of the Dynamo are, you know, 6 and 9 points or more. Because, when you start getting into that range, you're starting to talk about you have to win. Frankly, the Dynamo don't have to win. They're not in that position yet. They can still – and the problem with the Dynamo, and hopefully they've turned it around, is they've been just such a poor road team this year. But if they can just eke out some draws on the road instead of bringing home losses, it could be a turning factor. And the good thing, the one positive I'll say about the Dynamo lately, coming off of a win at KC, which obviously did wonders for their confidence. Because they needed that coming off of an 0-3 bashing at Columbus. But here again, prior to that match, we played at home. We won 2-0 against Philly. That's a game that could have easily been 4 or 5 had Andre Blake not played his socks off. I think that was his debut, and he had a phenomenal game against us at home to hold that match to 2-0, which could have been 4 or 5. Easily. The thing that's starting to, and it's been a long time coming, the gears that are starting to churn is we're finally starting to see Will Bruin score some goals, where he went on just a dry spell, like 7 or 8 games where he didn't score a goal early in the season. And now he's ratcheting that up a little bit. And he's not lighting the league on fire, but if they can go into every game and get a goal out of Will Bruin and with Brad Davis pitching in his typical assists and Giles Barnes playing very well still, we also have Ricardo Clark coming back from injury. He's starting to get a little more back in the groove. His fitness level's getting much better. Even though we lost Beasley for a couple of games, I expect he'll be back either this week or next. From what I read, I think I don't think it was anything, he had a hammy, but I think it's on the mend. I don't think it was anything major. But they haven't played well this season, but you have to stay positive. And they do have what I would say is a fairly favorable schedule in September. They have three of their 4 games are at home, all winnable games. One's against the Impact. I think we have Columbus, Philly, and Chicago. So I think our die will be cast through the month of September, because those are the teams that we have to jump, and those are the critical matchups that are going to vault us into the top 5 if that's indeed a position that we're going to wind up in.
Speaking about DeMarcus Beasley, before the hammy problem came up, how did he perform since the signing and since he started his trek back into Major League Soccer after the World Cup?
It's difficult to say how does a fullback change a game or change a team, but I think as much as his on the field presence. I think his off-the-field presence and his leadership ability, he came into a side that really needed some veteran leadership, because once you get past Brad Davis, and to some degree Ricardo Clark, although the team or maybe the players may see him differently, I don't see Ricardo Clark as necessarily a leader in he is a veteran, but I don't see him as a leader in the way that I see a DeMarcus Beasley, a guy who just carries himself on and off the field as a consummate professional. And this is still a very young team. I mean, the critical players on this team are still fairly young, especially across our back line. With players like Sarcote and Jermaine Taylor, I think having someone, a veteran like Beasley, come in and just sort of stabilize and settle some of the younger players, and and give them something to look up to. And I think his effect on the team has certainly been positive. Is he a shutdown corner? I can't really say that. But he's taken a little time to adjust in our team because at the time he came in, we weren't playing very well. So I think overall he's had, a stabilizing effect and certainly across the back line. Now, we still leak way too many goals, and that's probably something they're going to address in the off season or work on in the off season. But, I think the loss of Bobby Boswell, and depending on who you talk to in Orange, that was a good move, and other people will tell you that was the worst move we made in the off season was to let Bobby Boswell go. I kind of am of the mind that we had significant problems at the back last season, so a change had to be made. So I don't have a problem with letting Boz move on and sort of retweaking everything. I just think that we missed the boat a little in the offseason bringing in some better central defenders, and I think that'll be addressed in the offseason.
Absolutely. Just moving on, of course, talking about what's going on with the Dynamo. Does Dom look a little more flustered than normal? I mean, I know certain things are not going well for him at the moment with the club, not meaning himself personally, but just certain plays probably getting a little bit annoyed. Does he seem to be annoyed on the bench a little bit more than normal, or do you think he's handling the season so far the way you thought he should be?
I'd be hesitant to say he's more annoyed. I think since he's been here, he has a high expectation. When the players he's not opposed to calling out players by name. He does it in a very diplomatic way, but he will let players know personally and I think in the public square who's playing well and who's coming up short. And I don't think that his temperament is any different than than in the years when the Dynamo were having success. I think in some cases, if the Dynamo are winning 3-0, but they're not doing the things that Dom wants to see them do in a proper execution, in an execution manner, then they're going to hear about it. Conversely, if the Dynamo are not executing and they're losing 3-0, they're going to hear about it. And that I think is one of Dom Kinnear's better qualities, is that he's consistent. He's not up and down. And while I'm sure he's probably a little more personally frustrated at a season like we've had so far, I don't think that plays into into how he coaches. If he gets angrier or I don't see that. I think Dom's always been a volatile guy, and if you're not doing your job, you're going to hear about it. And if you're doing your job, you're probably not going to get a whole lot of compliments, but you're going to be told you're doing your job and keep it up. And I think that's how he runs his team, and I think that's how he's always run his team. And he keeps it pretty even. Now, every once in a while, he'll have an outburst if they really go in the tank one match. He will let them have it. In post-game interview but I don't think that he was. I remember the days back when the team first came here from out west, and they were a very good, solid team, but they, every once in a while, they would lay an egg, and he would let them have it. Nobody was spared. I mean, D-Row would catch his wrath, Brian Ching, whoever was not holding up their end of the bargain, he would let him know about it. And that just comes with the territory with Dominic Kinnear. He has a high expectation puts high expectations on you. He gives you a lot of room to, you know, when the players finally get into the squad and they make that starting 11 or that starting 11 and subs, they make it into the rotation. He expects performance, and I'm sure he's disappointed as we all are when we look at the table. You know, we've had a history of pulling these things out in the past, and who's to say we can't do it one more year?
Well, we'll see what happens there, Warren. And, of course, the Dynamo have a large hill to climb, but still, if anyone can pull them out of the hole, it's always going to be Dom. Warren, thank you for the time. I always appreciate it. I'll talk to you soon, my friend, and have a good evening.
All right. Thank you, Daniel.
No problem at all. That's Warren Jones down in Houston talking about the Dynamo and everything else that's going on. Who knows? Has the luck finally run out on the Dynamo for a late push? We'll have to wait and see what's going to happen. Let's not forget, Houston has one more trip up to New York, New Jersey, to take on the Red Bulls. And when Bradley Wright Phillips sees orange, it's usually a boatload of goals. So we'll see what happens then. And now it's time for the North American Soccer League segment, the fall season of 2014, as we recap these games. And let's go straight into it. The Fort Lauderdale Strikers hosting the San Antonio Scorpions, and it would be everything Strikers. In the 43rd minute, Fafa Picault made it 1-0, and they got to half with the lead late in the first. And then in the 79th minute, late in the second, Mark Anderson makes it 2-0, and the Fort Lauderdale Strikers are climbing up the table as they defeat San Antonio there by a final score of 2-0. Once again, final score for Lauderdale Strikers 2, San Antonio Scorpions 0. Great weekend for the Florida clubs. Tampa Bay Rowdies on the road up in Ottawa as they take a 2-0 road victory over at TD Place. Brian Shriver gets the first goal for the Rowdies in the 29th minute till Mr. Darryl Russell makes it 2-0 in the 41st minute up till halftime. And then that would be the end of that as the Rowdies get a road win in Ottawa. Final score, Ottawa Fury 0, Tampa Bay Rowdies 2. The Carolina RailHawks hosting the Atlanta Silverbacks over at Wake Med Soccer Park. Nothing happened in the first half as it was scoreless, but it was all Silverbacks in the second. Junior Sandoval makes it 1-0 in the 63rd minute, while Ryan Ruschendahl makes it 2-0 in the 75th minute as the Carolina RailHawks strangely all of a sudden lose at home, I believe for the third time in the fall season. Final score, Carolina RailHawks 0, Atlanta Silverbacks 2. This was the match of all matches in this past round, the Indy 11 hosting the New York Cosmos, and it looked like this might be a Cosmos victory. David Diosa with the first goal in the 6th minute, followed by Mad Stokelin in the 42nd, and at halftime it was 2-0 Cosmos. But out of nowhere, Mike Ambersley pulls one back in the 61st minute, and then Jermaine Johnson in the second half late or near stoppage time in the 90th minute gets the late equalizer, and the Indy 11 pull out a 2-2 draw at home over the New York Cosmos as they hold and steal away 2 points. Once again, final score, the Indy 11 2, the New York Cosmos 2. And then what's going on with the Edmonton club, FC Edmonton? They hold off the spring season champions, the Minnesota FC United, by a final score of 2-1. Chad Burt in the second half in the 65th minute makes it 1-0. Then Lance Lang makes it 2-0 6 minutes later. Daniel Mendez pulls one back for Minnesota, and that end of that, the Edmonton defeating Minnesota United FC. Final score, FC Edmonton 2, Minnesota United FC 1. And as we go ahead and take a look at the fall standings right now, the San Antonio Scorpions leading with 19 points, 6 wins, a draw with 2 losses, 9 matches played with a plus 7. In second place, the Minnesota United, 17 points out of 8 matches, 5 wins, 2 draws, and a loss, plus 9. Tampa Bay Rowdies in third, 5 wins, 3 losses out of 8 matches played for 15 points with a plus 3. FC Edmonton has climbed up to fourth place in the fall season from 9 matches played, 4 wins, 2 draws, 3 losses, a plus 2, 14 points. Fifth place, Fort Lauderdale Strikers, 9 matches played, 3 wins, 3 draws, 3 losses with a minus 2 on the differential, 12 points. Sixth place, Atlanta Silverbacks with 8 matches played, 3 wins, 2 draws, 3 losses with a plus 2 on the differential, 11 points altogether. The New York Cosmos in 7th place, 9 matches played. They've won 2 times, drawn 4, lost 3 with a minus 3 differential for 10 points. In 8th place, the Carolina Railhawks, 9 matches played, 3 wins and 6 losses, a minus 3 on the differential, 9 points. In the 11 right now in 9th place, 9 matches played, 2 wins, 2 draws, 5 losses with a minus 8 on the differential with 8 points. And in last place right now, Ottawa Fury, 8 matches played with a win, 2 draws, 5 losses, 5 goals scored, 12 allowed, a minus 7 on the differential, 5 points in this fall season. Let's go to the combined totals now and see what will transpire for the playoffs. So at this particular moment combined, Minnesota United in first place with 37 points. San Antonio Scorpions in second place, 36 points. The New York Cosmos still in third place, 29 points. The Fort Lauderdale Strikers tied with the Tampa Bay Rowdies, once again, 25 points. Tampa Bay has a game in hand, though, as they played 17. Fort Lauderdale has played 18. So, once again, goals scored is also a tiebreaker. Fort Lauderdale with 26, Tampa Bay with 25. In sixth place, Carolina Railhawks with 23 points. FC Edmonton in seventh place with 22 points. The Atlanta Silverbacks in eighth place with 21 points. Ottawa Fury in ninth place with 15 points. And the Indian 11 in last place with 12 points. And once again, this is the combined standings of both the fall and the spring seasons, fall season still going on. 2014 spring champions, Minnesota United already moving into the playoffs. Fall champion, currently San Antonio Scorpions. The two wild cards, the third best overall record, the New York Cosmos, and the fourth best, the Fort Lauderdale Strikers. But once again, Fort Lauderdale, Tampa Bay are catching up. The question is now this. How many games remaining do the Cosmos have against both the Strikers and the Rowdies? And as we quickly take a look at the teams and their schedule, we will go quickly to Fort Lauderdale to see which games are coming up next. And, of course, it will be over in Long Island this coming weekend on Friday, September the 6th, the Cosmos will be hosting the Strikers. And that will be the last time that these two teams will meet up. Very interesting to see what will happen there. The Rowdies, I know they've already played against the Cosmos at Al Lang Stadium. Now the question is, which day will or when will the Rowdies be playing against the New York Cosmos? And as we take a look here, go to the full schedule here, and we'll see if the Rowdies are going to be coming up. Yes, they will. They'll be coming later on in October on the 25th against the Cosmos. So right now, the combined standings, it's really, really going to be tight. It's also going to be a lot of fun to see who will face against whom in the playoffs in the North American Soccer League. And now we go to the schedule. The full slate of schedule for Saturday, September the 6th, Sunday, September the 7th. And here we go. starting off once again at Short Stadium at 7 o'clock Eastern. The New York Cosmos will be taking on the Fort Lauderdale Strikers. 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time, the Atlanta Silverbacks will be hosting the Indy 11 at Atlanta Silverbacks Park. At 8 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Central, the Minnesota United FC hosts the Tampa Bay Rowdies at the National Sports Center Stadium. And at 8:30 p.m. Eastern, 7:30 p.m. Central, San Antonio Scorpions hosting FC Edmonton at Toyota Field. And on Sunday at 3 o'clock Eastern, the Ottawa Fury will be hosting the Carolina Railhawks at TD Place up in Ottawa, Ontario, in Canada. So there is your schedule for the next round of games in the NASL, your second division league of U.S. club soccer, professional club soccer. Once again, a lot of fun going on in the North American Soccer League. We all know what's happening in the field. It all now depends on when you add the fall totals to the spring totals in the combined, who will go to the playoffs, who will face whom when we get to the end of the season. And the end of the fall season will be done on Saturday, November the 1st, and Sunday, November the 2nd. It should be a lot of fun. Should be tons of fun. And I cannot wait to see what's going to happen here as we move on from the regular season in the North American Soccer League. Of course, let's not also forget the United Soccer League's professional division are very close to finishing up, and hopefully we will get to talk about some playoffs from the USL Pro League as well. So it should be a lot of fun. It should be exciting. And just to let everyone know, the Tulsa Roughnecks have an official logo now, and it is a wonderful logo, I have to say. It's very tight. It's sharp. Tulsa Roughnecks FC with an oil rig in the top inside their own little design of a shield. They will have orange jerseys. They'll have a white jersey with an orange and dark blue trim, and then a dark blue jersey, shirt and shorts with some orange trim on the shoulder. So it looks really cool. Very, very cool. Very, very happy for the Tulsa, Oklahoma area. And now you're going to have an Oklahoma State rivalry between the Roughnecks and Oklahoma City Energy FC. And, of course, as many people know, Tulsa Roughnecks, that was the one-time North American Soccer League club, now a part of the United Soccer League's professional division. And it's pretty cool to see that for next year. That is awesome. I cannot wait for it. And it's going to be great. The game is growing. The game is improving. The game is going to improve and get better. And let's not also forget, also in 2015, Louisville City FC. Great logo. St. Louis Football Club coming also in 2015. Another fantastic logo. Let me just say this. I love the fleur-de-lis for these cities that are so used to, like New Orleans, of course, like the Saints have in the NFL. Fleur-de-lis, of course, with Louisville City inside the St. Louis Football Club with it looks like a PSG logo, except on the inside it's a darkish green and I would say maybe a darkish blue, maybe a purple, a little bit of a purple maybe. With a white fleur-de-lis, it looks fantastic. It looks wonderful. I cannot wait to see what's going to happen. And, of course, the logo is also back out for the Colorado Springs Switchbacks. Very interesting logo, as we see over there as well. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be tons of fun. I cannot wait for all of this to finally come down, finally happen. It's going to be absolutely fantastic. It's going to be exciting. I cannot wait to see what's going to happen in the future for professional soccer in the United States as there will be more clubs coming in both the NASL and the USL Pro League. It's going to be fun. It's going to be exciting. I personally cannot wait. I love it. I absolutely love it. And this is what we need from everyone to get involved with professional club soccer in the United States. If the World Cup didn't show you that we are continuing to become better and a lot stronger, then I don't know what is. And now it's time for the Red Bulls Hour. Before we get to the match, there's a couple of things I want to talk about. First of all, I want to honor a man that was on the show towards the end of last year's calendar show season for the 40 Cents Fire American Soccer Show. And I've mentioned to you many, many times, if you are a Red Bull supporter, I work with wonderful people. I talk to wonderful people. I get advice as well as asking questions that do get answered. I'm lucky enough to work with people like Michael Lewis from Big Apple Soccer, formerly the New York Daily News. He's currently now with New York Newsday on Long Island. There's also Brian Lewis, not related, from the New York Post. There's Jack Bell from the New York Times that I'm lucky enough to talk to and work with and bounce off ideas and everything. And I'm also honored when I work with this man, sadly, will no longer be with the New York Star Ledger. Of course, I'm talking about Frank Gias. Frank Gias, a longtime writer for the New York Star Ledger, and he wrote his last column for the Star Ledger as well as for NewJersey.com. Of course, they're the same company. And let me just say that hopefully he'll find something else to do. But let me just say, working with Frank, it's always a lot of fun because you enjoy having a conversation with him. He's so witty and funny, and, you know, it's just been a pleasure working with Frank at Red Bull Arena. He'll be writing at Red Bull Arena for the last time, I understand, on the Wednesday home game against DC United. Please read his columns. If he does decide to pick up something else in the future, I'm not going to go completely into detail what we talked about, but let me just say that, in my opinion, Frank Gias is one of those guys that will surely be missed when he's not writing anymore about the game in the United States as well as the game outside the United States. He does such a wonderful job, and hopefully Frank will be back on this show if he would like to take the invite, which I don't mind giving it to him because Frank is a wonderful person and a wonderful gentleman, and I will surely miss him not being in the press room at Red Bull Arena. I wish him the best of luck in his future, and all I can say is that Frank's a good guy, and please, if he does decide to write again, please, please follow him on Twitter, follow him on Facebook. If he does decide to do his own little blog or his own little article, wherever you can find it. So that's all I can say. I don't want to embarrass Frank too much. But once again, let me just say Frank Gias, a wonderful man, a pleasure to talk to, and I really do hope that he does get back on his feet as soon as possible. I didn't get a chance to talk about what happened against Montreal when I had Jason Iapico on from the Red Bull Rant, but I want to talk about Bradley Wright Phillips and the feat that he did about a week plus ago. You know, every year since the start of this league in 1996, the major questions that have always been asked, the major questions that have always been talked about has been, of course, the number one thing for this club was to win a title, to win an MLS Cup championship, to win the championship of this league. And I understand there are still many that fight about, well, it should not, you know, you win the regular season, that's your trophy, that's the end of it, there's no playoffs. I understand, but we have playoffs, so for now we're not going to worry about that. The other question was, when are we going to see a 20-goal scorer in a season happen? When are we going to see one of our top players get that opportunity to get number 20 and become that first player in club history to reach that feat. That day against the Montreal Impact, down a goal, and then Thierry Henry by himself putting the club back in front, leading 2-1, and then it all became the Bradley Wright Phillips show. And right away, Bradley Wright Phillips handles a great ball from Thierry Henry, strikes it past Evan Bush, and that made it 3-1. It also gave Bradley Wright Phillips number 19 on the season. And then when we get to the edge of stoppage time in the second half, Peggy Lou Yundula, not Thierry Henry, but Peggy Lou Yundula, gives Bradley Wright Phillips another great ball for him to attack the Montreal area, square his hips, and smack it past Bush inside the far post to make it 4-2 Red Bulls, breaking the club record for most goals in the season with 20. Bradley Wright Phillips has achieved something that no one would have thought he would achieve. He does it when Giovanni Severese never did it. He does it when Clint Mathis never did it. He does it when Thierry Henry never did it. But it looked like he had that opportunity back in 2012 after returning from his loan deal with Arsenal. And unfortunately, after scoring his ninth of the season in late April, Henry suffered a hamstring injury that knocked him out a couple of months. Pablo Angel, in the 2007 season, his first full season in MLS, scored 19 goals, one shy of 20. On the final day of the schedule back then in 2007, at then was the Home Depot Center, now the StubHub Center, Angel could not convert number 20. He had 20 goals in all seasons, or in all competitions, I should say, but he never had 19 in a league season. Bradley Wright Phillips has emerged as a hell of a talent and a man who probably has found a league where he has called home since last year's summer transfer window. This man has tortured MLS sides by attacking the goal, getting great play, great assists, great crosses, not just from Thierry Henry, but from Lloyd Sam, from Peggy Lou Yundula, from Eric Alexander, from Ambrose Oyongo, as well as Tim Cahill. This man has basically received so much help and so much wonderful delivery. He's earned this. 20 goals in a season in this league is nothing to sneeze at. Hard to get it in this league. The defenses are strong. The physicality is rough. Yet he has found the ability, Bradley Wright Phillips, to go out there and convert goals we haven't seen in a long time. We have seen players converting goals like it's a regular occurrence. We expect it from Thierry Henry. I don't think anyone's expecting or did expect that from Bradley Wright Phillips. And let's be honest here. He comes from great stock. Of course, his other brother, Sean Wright Phillips, has done wonderful things in the Premier League for the English national team. And, of course, their father, Ian Wright, has been a fantastic player in his own right at Arsenal that you can't argue with what he has done for the Red Bulls. All I can say is this. All I can say is that Bradley Wright Phillips has already crossed a hurdle, and that was the club record, which he will maintain till the end of this season, and then we'll see what happens in the future. And even though Thierry Henry has said Bradley should have 35 to 40 goals by now, which is true. But still, we have to say that right now, it's been a heck of a ride for Bradley, and he has done a wonderful job in steering us into this direction. Bradley Wright Phillips now, 7 goals away from tying the record held by both Roy Lassiter and Chris Wondolowski. 7 to tie, 8 to break. And can Bradley Wright Phillips stay on course to break this record? Can Bradley Wright Phillips stay on course to break this record? I believe he can. I believe this will be his time. And that also includes, and let's not forget now, the first Saturday in October at Red Bull Arena, the New York Red Bulls hosting the Houston Dynamo, 5 goals in 2 matches, 6 goals, 7 goals, actually, if you also count the playoffs, 7 goals, 1 assist against the Houston Dynamo. When Bradley Wright Phillips sees orange, he converts. And that, my friends, is an unbelievable moment. That, what we saw at Red Bull Arena that Saturday on August 23rd against the Montreal Impact, was a fabulous day to be a supporter of this club. Even I stood up in my position in the press box in the southern end of the stadium, and I applauded the effort, and I applauded the feat and the moment that Bradley Wright Phillips was, let's just say, we were lucky enough to either see it at Red Bull Arena or on MSG Network. We were that lucky to see what happened at Red Bull Arena that Saturday. It was absolutely brilliant, and I feel fortunate that I was in the stadium that day to watch it happen. And all I can say is, I hope he does break the record, and I hope that whatever gifts he gets, whatever he does to make it better, to allow him to be honored for this great moment, if it does happen, he's the man to do it. He is the man to pull this off. And I hope to be at Red Bull Arena to see it happen. Bradley Wright Phillips, congratulations once again on the club record. Go get the league record, and let's hope that you'll get to number 28 before this regular season ends. Thank you very much. But anyway, as we move forward here on the 40 Cents Fire American Soccer Show, all I can say is after two great matches in league play against Montreal and in the CONCACAF Champions League against FAS, this match against DC United was decent. First half, play from DC to attack. And then as the second end, or shall I say the back end of the first half was going, the Red Bulls with plenty of chances to go forward and to get a lead. It did not happen. And therefore, for the Red Bulls, they had to basically settle with a 0-0 draw at the end of the first half. And then, as the trade is in the business, when you're not on the field, or if you believe in superstition and you believe in jinxes and curses and all that fun stuff, and once in a while, I get that feeling. The worst thing that happened in the first half, or should I say around the second half, was miscommunication. Miscommunication that led DC United to convert on their first goal of the day, first goal of the game, and nothing till second half stoppage time, which was basically the nail in the coffin regardless of when it was. There was the play on after a goal kick on the DC end of the field. All of a sudden, it's delivered over the midfield stripe, and then Luis Silva taking advantage of a bad bounce on Ibrahim Sagaya, who was defending Silva as both were running towards goal, Silva with the ball. Now, some people are wondering what happened there, because on the live shot, like most of you, on the live shot, it did not look like anything was going to happen until all of a sudden the little interference happened with the signal, and then we had to go on replay to see what the hell happened. People were wondering, why did Ibrahim Sagaya stop his run to defend Silva? And once again, we have to say that Sagaya, if you saw it, did catch up to Silva. Luis Silva had the ball. Sagaya caught up to him and did defend him until all of a sudden he slowed down. Why did he slow down? Very simple. Because Luis Robles, who is the keeper for the Red Bulls, as we all know, who has had a fantastic season so far, informed Sagaya in his own way. He didn't, like, wave him off or anything. Basically, he just came off his line, and tried to play the ball. First of all, the ball was still outside the area. The ball was still on the foot of Luis Silva. Sagaya had him covered. But once Luis Robles decided to yell or wave off Sagaya, because he was going to play the ball, that's where the mishap came. And Robles came off his line. He went to attack the ball, swung and missed, and that gave Luis Silva free shot. Convert it. It's all yours. 1-0 DC. And that would change the entire dynamic of this match. Now, many of you are wondering, if that's the case, then why didn't Sagaya continue towards the net? Because once again, Sagaya, miscommunication with Robles. Both are at fault here, let me just say this right now. I know Luis Robles took the criticism and the blame on his shoulders. They said it was his fault, and that's good on him. We all know it's a mistake. It happens. Unfortunately, it's a lot bigger and terrible because it's against your rival. But the truth of the matter is that Luis Robles should have stayed on his line, should have stayed on the goal line. He should never, ever have left the goal line. He should have allowed Ibrahim Sakaya to play the ball because Sakaya caught up to Luis Silva, and he had him defending Silva until he got the word from Robles, leave it, I got it. The positioning of the ball was still outside the area. And in my view, as I've always said, Robles should never have left his line, but Sakaya should have continued to run towards the net just in case Robles was going to miss. And because of that cross-up, because of that miscommunication, the Red Bulls suffered a mental breakdown, not just getting scored on, but just couldn't find a way to get back into the game, even though there was plenty of time to pull off an equalizer. And unfortunately for the Red Bulls, they do not get out of sixth place. They do not jump back into a playoff position, even though there is still plenty of time. There is still plenty of time for them to jump into a playoff position. And they are able to do so. I understand many supporters right now, many fans right now are not happy with what happened, and they feel like the season is all over and done with, which I will disagree right now. And the only reason why I'm disagreeing is that this league is still very tough to predict on who is going to do what. All I can say is this. All I can say is that there are still six home matches remaining starting this coming Saturday against Sporting Kansas City at 7:30 p.m. Eastern live on NBC Sports Network. There is still a home match to get some revenge on DC United in the midweek on September the 10th, of course, the day before September the 11th, where we all mourn what happened at the World Trade Center and at the Pentagon on that terrible day in 2001. There is still plenty of time to do, and all I can say is that it's time to just calm down. I know there's not much time left in this season. It's time to relax, take it easy. And it's also time to not worry about these things. Yes, it's disheartening to see the Red Bulls not jogging around or not running faster because of the heat that happened down in D.C. I understand where some people are upset with it. I was not happy to see it either, but you know what? They have to perform out there in those conditions. It's not ideal. That's what it is. They need to go out there Saturday night against a Sporting Kansas City side that's struggling. Pardon me. And they need to go out there and take all 3 points. Now, obviously, they will not have Cahill this Saturday due to being called into the Australian national team for some friendlies. He'll be back for the midweek game against DC. Ambrose Oyongo will also not be available due to his call-up to the Cameroonian national team. And first of all, congratulations to Ambrose Oyongo for getting the call-up because, you know, that's a big deal. That's a very, very big deal. Good for him. Very happy for him that he got that. And let's all hope that he will take advantage of the situation. And let's also hope that he will do very well. For Cameroon, of course, I believe it's either friendlies or, who knows, African Cup of Nations qualifying. We'll have to wait and see what that could be. Once again, congratulations to Ambrose Oyongo for that call-up. A couple of players going to the U.S. Under-20 friendly, which would be Santiago Castano and Matt Miazga. So bench might be a little bit thin. And also, I personally want to thank the Costa Rican Federation for allowing Roy Miller to remain with the Red Bulls. That is until the final, if they do make the final in the Centro Americana tournament, that will be held here in the States. So I just want to say, thank you to the Costa Rican national team for allowing the Red Bulls to keep Roy Miller up to a certain point. I know it's big. It's only four games to either get into the Gold Cup for 2015 or getting that Central Americana championship to go into the 2016 Copa America, which is going to be joint venture with CONCACAF and CONMEBOL, of course. CONMEBOL celebrating 100 years in 2016 when it happened. So, you know, congratulations to them and everything. So all I can say is that one mistake, the Red Bulls 3 points. Plenty of opportunity before the mistake, plenty of opportunity to equalize after the mistake. But that's a situation that cannot happen and should not happen ever again. Because that was probably the worst mess up I have seen in a good long while. Mental breakdowns are not fun. Mental breakdowns are not fun. Because when you see that, you have the feeling of what went wrong there. Now, we're blaming Sagaya for the screw-up, because when you're watching on television, they're going to say to you, but look what happened. Robles was not even in the television picture until, you know, when Sagaya was slowing down. That doesn't mean anything. Just because you saw Gaia slowing down on your television screen, that means it's his fault. In no way was he to blame for the whole thing, once again. I understand you want to point blame at someone for making a very bad mistake, and believe me, I understand completely why many want to say, well, he's the reason why we lost. And once again, he's not the only one. He definitely is not the only one. It wasn't great. It was terrible. And, you know, basically it's called guilt by association. So we're going to have to wait and see, of course, you know, how these things are going to be handled. But once again, it's a situation where it's just not that good. And as we continue on here in the 40 Scenes Fire American Soccer Show, this is going to be a big test for them this entire month. Not only do they have to play at home against Sporting Kansas City, play at home against DC United, go on the road to Philadelphia, come back home against Seattle, and then go back on the road at the Galaxy. They have two big road games in the CONCACAF Champions League against the Montreal Impact and on the road at El Salvador to take on FAS once again. Now, once again, FAS with that loss to the Red Bulls eliminates them from trying to get into the top spot of the group. Now, these two games is where the Red Bulls are going to be tested with their mettle. These are the games now that the Red Bulls are going to really be tested. Because once again, it's not just the points that matter. It's also goal differential. They should have probably scored 8 or 10 goals on FAS here over at Red Bull Arena. But, you know, once again, you have to give credit to their keeper, Menendez Jr., for stopping Tim Cahill so many opportunities that he had. But once again, these types of games are going to be tough. We all know what's going to happen in Montreal on the road. On the road at El Salvador will be the tricky one because while it should be 3 points, and the only way it should be 3 points is if, A, they don't get a result in Montreal, or B, they do get a result in Montreal, which would be basically a point, and then they can go down there and just wipe them clean on their own field. The quality of the Red Bulls are definitely higher than FAS, and at the same time, the quality on the Red Bulls should be a little bit higher than Montreal, even though Montreal is playing for this tournament and they're basically done in MLS play. But once again, in this wonderful game that we love so much, something screwy could happen. Something screwy can always happen. It doesn't matter what game it is. It doesn't matter the sport. It doesn't matter who is at where in the standings of a league table, a Champions League table, or the one-offs in the Open Cups. These are going to be the tough ones that the Red Bulls are going to have to face. Because I'm telling you right now, this is what you're playing for all the time. You are playing hard to try and get into a playoff spot right now. And at the same time, you need to go out there and you need to make sure that you can get as many wins as possible. Because I'm telling you this, this team really needs to step it up. They have not been good all season. They've been Jekyll and Hyde. They really need to go out there. And even if it is over 100 degrees, and let me just say this right now, I thought it was a poor decision by Jair Marufo to not allow water breaks in the middle of the halves. Regardless of what's been done, this would have been a wonderful time to show the world that, yes, MLS does care about the player's safety, and MLS is going to be out there making sure when the temperatures are that hot, we'll allow the players to cool off with a water break. But then again, that's for another time, so we're not going to really keep on going with that. But still, a water break would have been absolutely much better to be had and to be shown. And as we continue on here, you know how bad those misses were by the Red Bulls? Very bad. I mean, Bill Hamid obviously was left high and dry on several crosses that his defenders could not get a hold on. And Bradley Wright Phillips had a chance for a goal maybe 3 or 4 times in the first half, either a miss or saved by Hamid. And at the same time, Tim Cahill, this season for him has been basically, he's been bitten with something. He's just not able to convert. Since that game against the Chicago Fire, has not been able to convert a goal. even in the CONCACAF Champions League home match when he captained the side. That's going to be a real tough one. And you know what? I can understand why he's probably snake-bitten, but still, though, now's the time to start converting some chances. Now it's time for him to go out there and really start putting that ball into the back of the net, either by foot or by head. It does not matter. He's got to go out there, and he knows he has to perform. Moving forward now, you know, Dan, the question has to be asked to Thierry Henry. I understand the question has to be asked to find out if this is it, if this is the end of a wonderful career in world football. We all know he's a legend at Arsenal. He's done some wonderful things for Barcelona, and he has provided some fantastic moments here in Major League Soccer during the regular season. Now, I don't like to make judgments about the way he looked on Sunday. Does this mean he's going to retire now? Case, I just think that the situation or the weather was extremely humid, and unfortunately, he's just walking around, which he should not be doing. I agree, but I don't believe he's thinking about retirement. Myself, personally, I don't want to see him retire. Now, once again, this is just my opinion, my belief. I don't know where he lives in the city. I don't go up to him during practice to beg him not to retire. I feel like that this is, of course, his own decision on whether he wants to say goodbye or not. And whatever the future holds for Thierry Henry, I only hope it's a wise decision from him and that he will continue to do well for himself, whether it's returning to the club as to Arsenal as an ambassador, or maybe he wants to get his coaching license, or maybe he wants to be a television pundit. That's up to him. But if I can just sound a little bit selfish, and I do want to sound a little bit selfish here, I don't want to see Thierry Henry retire. I don't want to see the man say goodbye to the world just yet. Personally, and this is, of course, my opinion, I believe Thierry Henry has, I would say, maybe two more years remaining in his career. Now, that's, again, my opinion. And I could be wrong, but in my opinion, I believe he has two more years left. And I think this withdrawn role from him is settling in nicely, which means you can have Tim Cahill and Bradley Wright Phillips up top. You can also play a 4-3-3 and have Henry withdrawn. And then he can set up top, meaning everything can go through Henry on a 4-3-3 up top, being behind both Cahill and Bradley Wright Phillips. Then what could happen? And it could happen. Henry can still, I know he doesn't have the big speed like he used to going up and down the field, but if he can go from the midfield stripe into an attacking position, that's brilliant. You can still have crosses coming from either Sam or Oyongo giving the ball to Henry, or Dax just feeding Henry so Henry can take the ball and go down the middle of the field. A good friend of mine, Miguel Nunez, you know him as the Big Bad Viper from the Viper's Nest website, who does those videos. He's been screaming for a creative number 10 for a long, long time. What would happen if you asked Thierry Henry to be that hybrid? He can still attack, yet he can still create. Could you imagine having Thierry Henry inside a 4-3-3 and he creates between the midfield and the strikers up top? You don't make him a pure midfielder. You just put out the 4-3-3, have him withdrawn behind Wright Phillips and Cahill, and at times, if they're not open, he can be the decoy or if he's going to be withdrawn and both Cahill and Wright Phillips are ahead and attack, but they don't have an outlet to have a shot, they could always give the ball back to Henry. And you know Thierry Henry has a hell of a shot. He still has that fabulous right foot. That's where I could see Henry helping out. So that's the end of it. That is where I see things with Thierry Henry if he does decide to stay in the game. Because, very simply put, he can still do these things and he can still do them brilliantly. I don't know if he can go back up. I mean, he can go back up top, of course, and have a strike partner with either Bradley Wright Phillips or Tim Cahill. The truth is that if he remains withdrawn, he can be doubly dangerous. And I really, truly believe that this could be the best thing for him later on in his career. Like I said before, I hope he plays another 2 years. Because I think he can play another 2 years. But once again, that's my opinion and my opinion alone. Not saying this is what someone else is saying. This is what I believe Thierry Henry can do if he decides to continue on with the Red Bulls. Because for sure, for sure. And I understand he'll be another year older, but if he can play a little bit more withdrawn, I think it will bring an extra dynamic in the attack during runs, and I still think he can do it. Ladies and gentlemen, let's not forget now. I want to update you on some things. Don't forget, tomorrow, once again, on the NBC Sports Network, the United States will be on the road in Europe as they take on the Czech Republic in Prague on a friendly. The match will be on at 2 o'clock Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific, on the NBC Sports Network. It will start at 2:15. Post-game show will be on at 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 1:30 p.m. Pacific, here on the Blog Talk Radio, For Your Scenes Fire show, blogtalkradio.com/For Your Scenes Fire. You can listen here. You can listen to it also on fansfavorite.com on the Red Bull section. Just click on the Red Bulls tab, and you'll see the For Your Scenes Fire logo. If you want to listen in, of course, you can click on the tweets, the Facebook, the Google Plus, if you follow me, to go ahead and listen to the show. It's going to be a pretty good show. I'm excited about these young kids getting an opportunity. We'll see what happens as we move forward. Now, I'm going to finish off this hour by discussing an article that I saw written on World Soccer Talk. Now, let me say, of course, World Soccer Talk was once several sites under the gaffer. Of course, there was the EPL Talk website, the MLS Talk website, Bundesliga, La Liga, Serie A, World Cup buzz, and everything. And the gaffer decided to end all those sites and do it into one whole site called World Soccer Talk. Now, apparently there's been an article written, the New York Red Bulls CONCACAF Champions League match, as the writer, I had the article here, I'm going to go get it soon, I just want to relocate where I saw. I know where I saw. I just have to go and find it. But the thing is, I just want to make sure that I get the correct person. And the that was weird. So I clicked on it. Anyway, well, I thought I had it, but I guess not. Well, that's okay. All right, well, I'll get to it a little bit later. I thought I sent the link, but I guess not. Well, I can look it up somewhere else. But anyway, the particular writer was attacking the attendance at Red Bull Arena because apparently, here it is. The writer's name of this article on World Soccer Talk is Todd Simmons. And he says, New York Red Bulls CONCACAF Champions League attendance highlights problems. Well, first of all, let me say this. The CONCACAF Champions League, unfortunately, is not a high-profile club tournament, even though this should be because it's CONCACAF-related. Now, I understand, you know, with UEFA and CONMEBOL's Champions League, of course, we all know the Copa Libertadores is from CONMEBOL in South America, and the UEFA Champions League, of course, is in Europe. These tournaments have been around a lot longer and obviously producing a lot better results in the seats because it's been there for a long time. A lot of people are going to flock to that because they want to watch the best clubs in the world. Now, not to say that CONCACAF is there is anything to sneeze at, but CONCACAF, they need a Champions League because they are trying to give every single club out there to qualify for this tournament a chance at doing something great. And when you're talking about clubs, Glee, that are not in Los Angeles, or if you want to talk about clubs in Los Angeles, you know, if you want to talk about attendance problems, how about you check out what happened in L.A.? Now, I know Thierry Henry did not play in the game against FAS. It was Tim Cahill, and basically half the team were the starters, the other half were depth players. But you know what? The Red Bulls were the better side. And all I can say is this. 11,000 plus on a weeknight, on a midweek night day or an evening or whatever, over 11,000 is pretty damn good, Mr. Simmons. Having over 11,000 people nearly filling up the lower bowl, majority of it, is a damn good night in MLS. Because why, Mr. Simmons? Because you are not up here. I understand Thierry Henry did not play. You know what? He's earned the night off. He probably might be on the starting 11 when they head up to Montreal for the road game in the CONCACAF Champions League. You know, this is the first time since the 2009-10 season where the Red Bulls entered this Champions League when there used to be the qualifying round, a goal aggregate playoff, because they were the runners-up in the 2008 MLS Cup title that they lost to the Columbus Crew. And now they they redid the whole format to make it better on the travel expenses, and they felt eight groups of three was a lot better. To be honest, I was expecting a lot less. I was expecting somewhere between 4,000 to 5,000 people. The lower bowl was three-quarters full at Red Bull Arena. That includes on my side of the stadium where the press box is and those seats behind me and on the side. Over 11,000 came to Red Bull Arena in the lower bowl. Supporters groups were there in full song. It all sounded great, brilliant, fantastic. And because now you want your shot in saying why this was an embarrassment. This is not an embarrassment. We are not the CONCACAF, excuse me, we are not the UEFA Champions League, and we are not the Copa Libertadores. This is the CONCACAF Champions League. More needs to happen. So far, you have clubs that are world-class, of course, in England, in Germany, in Italy, in Spain, in France, and a few others, Scandinavia, and other places within the continent. The only world-class clubs in CONCACAF, sir, are in the United States and Mexico. So if you think FAS is a big draw, you are sadly mistaken. If you think facing FAS was supposed to be a big draw for everyone to come over, incorrect. Do I wish the place was sold out? Of course I do. You know I wish the whole place was sold out for the CONCACAF Champions League games, but you know what? It didn't happen. Having over 11,000 in Red Bull Arena for this type of atmosphere or this type of match was a mitzvah. I'm telling you right now, I'm proud. I am very proud of the Red Bulls for drawing over 10,000 people. I expected between 4,000 to 5,000. Oh, but then again, you didn't bitch when the Galaxy barely had anybody at the StubHub Center during all these group stage games in the CONCACAF Champions League. There was no Landon Donovan. There was no Robbie Keane. And there was no David Beckham during the group stage. Pardon me. All they had were the backups and the reserves, that's it. But they were enough to go out and win these games. Yet there was no article discussing that. You are ill-informed, Mr. Simmons. And sadly, you failed. I understand you want to get MLS's goat. I understand you want to go out and attack MLS and do this and do that. But the point is, if you've had all the facts in front of you, outside of assuming you did, then basically you don't know what's going on. It's really a shame. It's really a shame to see an article like this on a website that where I used to basically write articles for and on MLS, US Soccer, and the Red Bulls. I am sadly disappointed. I am very, very disappointed. I mean, look, I don't control what goes on at World Soccer Talk at all. I've written a guest column about the Open Cup because basically I wanted to do something nice and help out, because the truth is that, you know, I believe the Open Cup got disrespected once again when you're playing round four games during the World Cup, which should never have happened in the first place. All I know is that this article is terrible. It's ranting about something that shouldn't be ranted on, because we all know what's been going on with these Champions League games. Even midweek games sometimes are not that great in MLS. there is not enough quality in CONCACAF when it comes to club football, club soccer, like it is in Europe. I mean, we saw, or if you see, all these clubs below Mexico, some of them even in Mexico, having more than one shirt, one sponsor for the shirt. You have the main sponsor on the main part of the jersey, but you also have other sponsors like on the sleeves, on the back, on the lower end of the jersey, near the collar of the jersey. All these clubs do not have a major sponsor in the middle of the shirt, below Mexico. They may be strong clubs within their own league, but they're not strong when it comes to being outside their league in the CONCACAF Champions League. Know the situation, know what's going on in this region, and don't be a Euro snob. It's very simple. It's very, very simple. Understand the situation. And don't assume, well, this would have been a lot better if this would have happened. No. There is no Real Madrid. There is no Barcelona. There is no Bayern Munich. There is no AC Milan. There is no Paris Saint-Germain. There's no Man United. There's no Man City. There's no Rangers, no Celtic, none of that. Club America, Pachuca, Torrey, Santos Laguna, DC United, New York Red Bull, Chicago Fire, and everything else that goes on with both MLS and Liga MX. These are the only leagues right now that are strong enough to actually do well in the CONCACAF Champions League up until the scheduling comes for the knockout stages. Do us all a favor and write a better article. Do us all a favor and have some knowledge. And that's all I can say about that. I want to thank my guests for tonight. I want to thank Daniel Squizzato from the Canadian Soccer News Group. I also want to thank my good friend Warren Jones for talking about the Houston Dynamo on the show tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you once again for listening tonight. Join me tomorrow at 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 1:30 p.m. Pacific. Post-game show, USA versus Czech Republic in Prague. Once again, my name is Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you very much for listening tonight. As always, please, I beg of you to enjoy your football, enjoy your soccer, and keep on listening to the best American soccer talk on Blog Talk Radio, the Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show. Once again, my name is Daniel Feuerstein. As always, I beg of you to please enjoy your football. Thank you. Have a good night, everybody, and talk to you Wednesday late afternoon. Bye-bye for now.